Et le flot sans effort nous pousse enchaîner l'un et l'autre et nous laisse tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Entraînés par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, nos deux mains restent soudées. Et parfois soulever nos deux corps enlacés s'envolent et retombent tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Et la joie qu'elle a poussée par son sourire me transperce et rejaillit au fond de moi. Mais soudain, je pousse un cri parmi les rires quand la foule vient l'arracher d'entre mes bras. Emportée par la foule qui nous traîne, nous entraîne, nous éloigne l'un de l'autre, je lutte et je me débat. Mais le son de ma voix s'étouffe dans le rire des autres et je crie de douleur, de fureur et de rage et je pleure. Et traînée par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, je suis emportée au loin. Et je crispe mes poings maudissant la foule qui me vole, l'homme qu'elle m'avait donné que je n'ai jamais retrouvé.
Supported Community Radio, KBOO.
Recently, Mark Zuckerberg announced he'd be changing Facebook's name to Meta, as in the metaverse, another world within our world, augmented and virtual reality coming together with meet space, the real world, to create another world, another life.
Imagine you put on your glasses or headset and you're instantly in your home space. It has parts of your physical home recreated virtually. It has things that are only possible virtually. And it has an incredibly inspiring view of whatever you find most beautiful.
Hey, are you coming?
Yeah, just gotta find something to wear.
In one college classroom, students have spent the entire semester in another universe.
I was standing there with my little avatar in the virtual campus, looking around all the completed buildings and thinking, I know exactly where I have to stand in the real world to get this view.
Learning through virtual reality is on the rise. From Virginia Humanities, this is With Good Reason. I'm Sarah McConnell. Today, gaming in the classroom. A lot of universities have spent the last year hastily trying to transfer all their in-person offerings to virtual spaces. Lisa Huvel's leadership course may have been one of those ahead of the curve. Her students have been building their campus out virtually and now have the attention of the university's higher-ups. With Good Reason's Lauren Francis has that story.
At the end of October, there was a huge fire at Christopher Newport University. Not in real life, but in the virtual campus that students are building for their leadership class.
I'm wondering if that's off.
I mean, it's a little bit off with this extra added, like, line, because that's technically where, like, the indent is, and it should go straight up from that.
Students in an Introduction to Leadership course are using Minecraft to build out the campus on the server, in the metaverse, in another life, basically.
Because if we look at it from this angle...
If this is going straight, if Gaines is going straight, this is angled.
When I got the email that I needed Minecraft for my college class, I was like, I mean, okay, I'll take it.
That's Allison. She was in the first group of students to take the course. And she was already pretty familiar with Minecraft. She used to play it in the back of her parents' car on the way to travel ice hockey games.
My mom's like, where are we sending you?
So, what is Minecraft? It's what they call a sandbox game, meaning it's virtual land where users can make their own experiences using building blocks, resources found on site, and their own creativity.
Like, Minecraft, even my dad looks at it, it's like, oh, this is like as boring and simple as you can get. You can do a lot with it. It's just what you put onto it.
That's Aiden. He and other students are really into Minecraft. And others, not so much.
For me, it's just a class, but I prefer to do Minecraft than write a paper.
It sounds easy, right? Just play a video game for a class. but it's pretty intense.
Like, looking at the buildings, they look great. They're like, oh yeah, that's 1-to-1. How do you get that 1-to-1? How do you measure something that in the game is 1 meter by 1 meter with you being 2 meters tall? How do you measure that to the Tribble Library we're standing in right now? How do you get that when we're in feet out here, they're in meters down there, and how do you get the same feeling of that size without making it look off? Like, keep the look, but also the feeling.
Like right now, students are trying to replicate the round buildings on CNU's campus, but Minecraft is really boxy, so that's tough to do.
Definitely the angles. It's really hard to create most of the angles in Minecraft. And columns and structures, like anything cylindrical is a big constraint. And anything angled, because there's only so many different angles you can take in Minecraft. You can't get that gradual angle. It's more like a steep 45 or a 90, no in between.
Students rely on Google Maps and even blueprints of the campus to make things happen at scale.
And it's a different type of experiential learning that has a great deal of meaning because they're seeing the results of what they do.
This is Professor Lisa Huevel. She created the class along with Jan Daughtry, an IT specialist. They watched in awe as students worked through their projects.
Oh, you built this little machine that sets the forest on fire.
Yes.
Oh,
so we don't have to sit here and light it on fire. Yeah.
By the time the hour-long class was coming to an end, students had developed an innovative solution to their need to clear more forest for building space.
So basically, it's using the redstone block in Minecraft to create a cycle that repeats a timer.
To translate, they basically made an automatic flamethrower within Minecraft. Unfortunately, though, there are no limits to how far the fire can go, and some neighboring villages are kind of getting burned down. But that's a problem for the next class meeting.
I would say creativity is a wondrous but chaotic thing that it takes a lot of effort to control and to really make things out of.
Before I visited the Minecraft class, I had never been to Christopher Newport University's campus, but I had visited the students' Minecraft world. And once I was physically on campus, I felt like I had walked into the Minecraft world.
Yeah, I've definitely walked around the Great Lawn and like seen, like I can look at McMurrin and see McMurrin in Minecraft and be like, this is exactly what I, like this is the same.
At the end of the semester, executive members of the university will come to hear students' final presentations. The university is getting ready for the future of metaverses and alternate realities. Plus, it might come in handy if, say, a global pandemic shuts down the campus for another 18 months. For With Good Reason, I'm Lauren Francis.
Lisa Huevel is best known on her college campus as being the professor of the Minecraft course. A professor of leadership and American studies at Christopher Newport University, she wanted her Introduction to Leadership course to be hands-on, so she called on Jan Daugherty to help build it out. Jan is a gamer and an IT specialist at Christopher Newport University. Lisa and Jan, people might think it's coddling to use video games as a basis for a college course, but you are confident that video games are great teaching tools. How so?
I think what I'd like to say first is that it really isn't about just games in school, whether it's university or K-12. It's about innovative teaching and learning that reaches students. That's what it's about for us.
Lisa's right. I'd also like to point out that the idea of calling it coddling kind of operates under this assumption that games and the act of play or learning through play is something that's just limited to children. And I think the more the population that grew up with gaming grows up, we find that many of the most profound things or the most lasting things we've learned are things we learned or practiced through games. And there's not a whole lot of a reason to abandon that if it's such a potent mode of learning.
When students find out that you are using Minecraft as a basis for a college leadership course, are you finding they're extra interested?
Oh, man. Every time it comes up.
Well, sometimes even the students who are familiar with Minecraft, I've found they have to understand what's going to happen during this course. because they don't necessarily know why we're doing it. And we need to go in and explain to them that they're actually going to be researchers working with us, because we're in the fourth year of a major research project for us on what Minecraft means in terms of being a threshold freshman experience, for example. How does it build community? How does it appeal to students of this age range? And for me as an instructor, to be able to find out if they do this over the course of the semester, does it build their competencies in a way that enhances their understanding of leadership?
How would you describe Minecraft for people who haven't played it? Is it like building with digital Legos?
That's where a lot of people like to start, and I think it's a great place to start. I always think of it as kind of an infinite sandbox world. In any mode, basically, you're dropped into a world with a ton of resources, and you can go in and gather resources, and you can craft things, and then build basically whatever you want. Say if you're in a mode where we like to call survival mode, where you have to gather your own materials, the first goal would be to gather enough, you know, wood or dirt to make yourself a house. What you decide to do in that infinite world is basically your own. You can go mining and gather more materials, and you can build whatever it is you want to build. The sky's the limit. People have gone in and used Minecraft worlds to build things that, frankly, boggle my mind. I've seen people like build the entirety of Middle Earth in a Minecraft world. And that must have taken us so many hours and just so much dedication, but like, that's the scale that you can take these worlds out into.
Were both of you interested in gaming even before this course?
Oh, yeah. I actually grew up as a bit of a gamer. My mom bought me Pokemon as a kid. I'd play handhelds all the time growing up. I started playing console games around college when I could finally afford one. But they're such a formative experience, is being able to kind of experience the stories and the kind of moments that video games can really create. Like, on the drop of the hat, I could tell you the first video game that made me ugly cry. It was Mass Effect 3. But it was such a grounding moment that, you know, you don't forget that sort of thing.
I think sometimes Jan and I were meant to find one another on the CNU campus, because I came from the Colonial Williamsburg Foundation, and I had helped to design interactive games that we used for our national programming. And I was looking for a way to bring that into my classes at CNU. And when we started talking, the path became apparent of how that was going to happen.
So what you do in that class is basically have your students create a virtual Christopher Newport University campus. How is that so great for an introductory class on leadership?
Well, this is now in the fourth year, and so we have worked to get to that point, Sarah.
Yeah, the first couple of years weren't so far to the point where they were creating the virtual campus. What were they doing that first year?
Well, we had to start off very basically with just having them do tasks in Minecraft in teams. And the main pillars of the course, self, group, and leadership, are to understand the role of the self in being a leader, who you are, how you lead from the inside out. And the other part of it is, how do you also work with and communicate with other people? So to be able to find some type of a project that could be carried over the semester that they could report on at different stages, and I could bring in these educational concepts, like the stages of group development by Bruce Tuckman, for example, that helped them to understand what it is we're trying to get across in this very foundational course. It's the first in the leadership program that they take as freshmen.
What are the stages that Tuckman outlines for group formation?
Bruce Tuckman was a psychologist, and in the 1960s, his research indicated that there were distinct stages that a group goes through. The first one is forming, which makes a lot of sense. The second one is norming. How does a group start to put together its process? The third stage is storming, which some groups never get past. They can't figure out who's on first, they can't get the roles straight, and they end up squabbling more than actually getting to where they want to in their goals. If you get past that, you get to performing. And that's when a group reaches its peak efficiency in terms of what it wants to accomplish. And then later on, he realized there was yet another stage, and it's called adjourning. And that means it's the time when a group, unless it's going on to another project, has to face the fact that there's going to be some sense of termination, and how are they going to handle that? And our students will experience that again at the end of this semester.
When your students got to the stage where they're actually making some of these buildings, did they form these groups and follow through pretty much the stages that you just described?
They do, and they report on that. That's part of their process, to be able to observe the roles they're in and how they impact one another and how well they communicate with each other. And yes, they do. It's been very interesting to watch that, because they don't all come in as Minecrafters. Some come in, as I said earlier, with no experience and without the other students to help them, who are willing to walk them through this and get them to feel a sense of accomplishment. The team would never gel, and we see it happen over and over again. They come out with a sense of community, and for freshmen, this is so important, that they're coming to a new space with new people, and this is a way to bond.
I'd actually like to add a little bit on what Lisa was saying about how quickly, like, these tasks in this project kind of help the team bond and kind of develop their dynamic. And that's just in contrast to, I think, I just like to contrast to I think, what she had prior to implementing the Minecraft project. If you'll correct me, you had like a hypothetical pen and paper scenario where they would kind of store, you know, they would work through a hypothetical plan.
Jan, that's exactly right. It could be something like nuclear holocaust. You have one shelter. Who are you going to save out of this group of people? And they have to talk amongst themselves and figure that out. And it was a one-stop only, more or less.
Yeah, and it's one-stop only, but also it's all purely hypothetical. When you add in a level of simulation, like in Minecraft, where they actually have to go through and make the plan and execute on the plan, you're adding a level of kind of real-time execution that takes anything that they're learning beyond the hypothetical, and they actually have to examine like the real world team dynamics, because while they're in a virtual environment, it's still a real team.
Tell them about the suicide tower.
Oh, the suicide tower. I think this was back from the first semester, and there was this one team that built their house as a home base, and then they go out and gather materials for another part of the project, and they get lost. Just, they were all together, but they were hopelessly lost. They had no way of getting back to their home base. But that required them to do kind of some quick real-time problem solving, and they quickly realized that one of the key mechanics of the game is that if you die, you're automatically respawn back at home, right next to your bed. So they promptly decided, you know, they hadn't gone far enough in the material gathering. They kind of did a cost assessment and decided that forgetting where their home was wasn't worth keeping all the materials. So they promptly built a giant tower and then started just jumping off of it until everybody in the team died and respawned back at their house. And it was one of the funniest examples of team building and problem solving, you know, on the fly problem solving that I'd ever seen.
Are you finding that leadership is changing in recent years? That our notions of what makes for good leadership have changed?
That is absolutely true, Sarah, because there are a number of new approaches that have emerged during the 20th century. And one of them is this idea of adaptive leadership, about how leaders can help people to address problems and face challenges and actually adapt to change, which can be very painful and disorienting. And so this idea is that leaders don't solve the problems, but they're going to encourage others to help with the problem solving and to do this adapting to a new environment or a new situation, to find those solutions together. And that's exactly what these Minecraft teams do.
A lot of the best teams, from what I've seen, tend to, I guess, make the best use of all of the players. They get a kind of a strong sense of what each member of the team is really good at, and then kind of structure their plan in order to let them contribute the most around their talents, because then they're having fun because they know they're doing something that they have fun doing or they're good at. And, you know, even if there's one person kind of directing everybody, they're kind of acknowledging that other people have these skills that the team really needs to thrive.
And what Jan's talking about is one reason why I've changed the actual instructional model for the teams. When we started out, the leadership rotated between the team members, and the followers and the leader for that particular part of the project, they'd sort of report on each other and evaluate what was happening and how it felt to change roles. But now that we've moved into actual construction of the campus, it's more of a project management based function, to where you have a group of people who have specific competencies and they stay in those roles over the course of the semester. And it doesn't mean that they don't flow and help one another in different ways, but it does look to that, to see who's strongest in what areas.
Do you find more and more classrooms at the college level are using video games in the curriculum? I can imagine, for instance, that engineering, computer science, architecture would widely use them.
We would certainly hope so. You see it in business. You see it in simulations that are done in schools of business very often. A lot of the things that we've seen happening with Minecraft, just looking at what's happening across the nation, has been student-driven and student-led.
There's honestly so many subjects that I think would fully benefit from taking video games more seriously as a medium. You know, you mentioned business and engineering, and we're using them as in leadership studies, but I think even other disciplines, like personally, I think that taking them more seriously as an art form would be amazing. I've played games with stories and themes and the kind of storytelling that are in some cases better than some books I've read. They have that same level of depth and intention that you could analyze a video game the same way you analyze, you know, a piece of art.
And in the early 2000s, a professor of education, his name is John Paul Gee, he was focused on research in literacy and learning. And he was already seeing then the value of video games to help students with both of those areas.
Oh yeah, and since then they've only gotten better. There's a YouTube channel I listen to called Games as Lit that actually goes into the idea of analyzing video games from the perspective of treating them as a piece of literature, analyzing themes and characters and story arcs and even how the game mechanics kind of reiterate on those themes as well. It's so illuminating.
I've noticed that students at campuses across the country have started to build entire campuses in Minecraft. And I wonder if that is something related to the pandemic. I mean, when everyone got sent home into the virtual world, this was made more possible.
Yeah, I think the trend of people creating virtual campuses started long before the pandemic, but it started really hitting its stride and becoming way more popular once people started going into lockdown. Because on some level, what students really do want when they go off to college is to go off and have that campus experience, to be able to meet people on campus and to connect and to do things and to build these relationships and make these connections. And when you're in a situation where what you originally had is impossible because everybody has to stay inside and be safe, you're still hungry for a way to do that. And providing a virtual campus, you know, the space may be digital, it may be virtual, but when you meet someone in that space, the connections you make are still real.
I read that some of the Ivy Leagues are now so competitive when it comes to creating virtual campuses with Minecraft, that kind of thing, that they've started using digital tools that make it much faster and more elaborate. So instead of the sort of painstaking Lego by Lego approach that you might get with just Minecraft,
they're using add-ons that, you know, are sort of cheaty ways of doing it, right? Well,
that makes sense for the reasons that they might be using it. If their goal is to just have the product that they can use for stuff like virtual tours, yeah, but our point isn't just the product, it's the process that the students go through in building it, which I think gives them a level of ownership that wouldn't be provided otherwise. Right, Dr. Hubel?
Absolutely, Jan, because it's a little daunting at first when you're faced with this campus, this real-world campus, and you understand that you're going to take GPS coordinates and Google, and you are going to figure out the building dimensions yourself. You're going to figure out the footprint of these buildings on the campus. And each team is going to separate out to play the roles that are going to make that happen. That is not exactly the same as a entertainment type gameplay to where you really want to get through it and get to the next level. We're looking at creating something that we hope is going to have lasting value.
And the level of investment students feel about the virtual campus because they built it themselves and built it so painstakingly so that it's as accurate as it is. I think the first time that I logged in after the first semester's sets of buildings were done, I remember standing in between the little gap between our clock tower and Forbes Hall. Like, I was standing there with my little avatar in the virtual campus, looking around all the completed buildings and thinking, I know exactly where I have to stand in the real world to get this view. And just the fact that the students put in that level of love to make it that accurate just blew my mind.
Why do you think it is that future students, that young high school students considering a university, would be so drawn to a Minecraft virtual representation of the school instead of just going online and seeing a video virtual presentation of the school?
I think it's the interactivity, right? The difference between watching a video and going there in a virtual space is that there's a level of separation in video. You know, it doesn't feel like you're really there. You don't get to make choices about where to go and what to look at. You know, it's all curated for you, and you know, you have to look at whatever other people choose for you to look at. With that interactivity, you can kind of explore around. You can look at the parts that matter to you. You know, if you're a science student, you can spend more time wandering around Forbes Hall. Or if you are you know, a bookworm, you could go head off to the library instead of having to just wait for it to happen in the video.
Do you think part of it is also they just love online gaming and this is a cool way to see a campus?
Yeah, that is probably a part of it. You know, video games are mainstream now. It's one of the most popular forms of entertainment in the world. So the fact that somebody's taking it seriously probably kind of feels like, in a way, they're being taken seriously. Like, oh, hey, they're doing things in a way I understand. And they're not saying that it's some childish thing that I'm going to have to abandon once I go to college and become an adult.
One of the professors in our leadership program emailed me this summer because she was taking a family relative around the campus. This was a young man who's in high school. And she said what really got his attention was when she told him that Minecraft was being used to teach in the department.
You never told me this story.
I know. It's pretty amazing. There may be parents and grandparents out there who have an opportunity to bond and have a whole new source of conversation and connection with players in their own families just by virtue of taking an interest in what these games mean to them.
Well, Jan and Lisa, thank you for talking with me on With Good Reason.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Thank you, Sarah.
Lisa Huvel is a professor of leadership and a professor of American Studies at Christopher Newport University. Jan Daugherty is an IT specialist at Christopher Newport University. This is With Good Reason. We'll be right back. Welcome back from Virginia Humanities. This is With Good Reason. You know that joint that started aching after your 30th birthday and never let up? You try to stay off it or move it as little as possible, but that actually makes it worse. James Thomas and his team are working on virtual reality games that seduce users into exercising their pain points. Here they are with a pain patient playing virtual reality tennis.
Load screen is not up in there, is it?
No.
Okay, you
can. All right, here you go.
All right, I need to go full Jimmy Connors on me.
That's James Thomas. He leads a team at Virginia Commonwealth University's Motor Control Lab, and he's a professor in the Department of Physical Therapy. James, what led you to think of using virtual reality for people with back pain?
Well, I've been a clinician for a lot of years, and before going into research, ended up looking at a certain aspect of pain and fear of pain and how it influenced how people moved. And we were trying to come up with a clever idea of how we could engage. We really started in a very, you know, virtual reality in the most basic manner. We were playing, our original game was played on a 3D TV with shutter goggles. And then the introduction of the Oculus Rift 2, the headset, the fully immersive, we just said we got to jump in right away.
What do you mean about people with back pain having fear? What were you trying to get them past?
Yeah, so there's a lot of work that people have looked at that people who have sort of high fear of movement generally think that my back is hurt, and if I move, I'm going to really be hurt and it's going to be permanent.
Yeah.
And so what people tend to do is there's the whole fear avoidance model of back pain that was developed. We actually were one of the first labs to say, okay, how do these fears actually play out with people with back pain? So that was the whole rationale.